In a 2007 study, the mean survival was 29 days longer for hospice patients than non-hospice patients, reports Johns Hopkins Medicine from statistics from the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization and Hospice Association of America. Good afternoon and welcome to Have a Care, the show that spotlights humans acting for humanity. I am your host, Danielle Padilla, and today we have a very special guest, Stacey Thomas, the spiritual counselor and volunteer coordinator for Valley's Best Hospice in Burbank. Thank you for being here today, Stacey.
Thank you so much, Danielle. I'm very happy to be here.
Great. Now, you've been a spiritual counselor and volunteer coordinator at Valley Best Hospice since 2016, correct?
Yes.
Perfect. Now, that's quite a title, spiritual
yes.
counselor and volunteer coordinator.
Right.
In your opinion, what makes this position or title important in your line of work?
Well, that's a loaded question. Okay. So since 2011, I have been involved with hospice mm-hmm. in general. And as the spiritual counselor, I provide spiritual care, emotional support, that kind of thing, to patients and their families who are terminally ill mm-hmm. and at the end of their lives. That's important because at the end of life, people start asking a lot of existential and philosophical questions. So I can be their guide, their listener, someone to provide that kind of support. As far as being the volunteer coordinator, this is something that I sort of fell into along the way, and it's an aspect of my job that I have come to really love and appreciate because I'm able to bring volunteers into our organization and help them help people who are at the end of their life. A lot of times people are lonely, they need somebody to come and visit with them, provide them with just companionship and socialization. So the volunteers can come in, sit with them, and be that friendly visitor for lonely people.
I see. Interesting. So going back to being a spiritual counselor mm-hmm. and how do you help patients with all types of faiths?
That's actually really easy for me.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I earned my Master of Divinity degree in 2011, I did earn it from an interfaith university, mm-hmm. interfaith seminary. And I have no problem at all speaking with people of all faiths and of no faith. Some of my best mm-hmm. conversations with patients have actually been with patients who would call themselves atheist or agnostic.
Wow, interesting. So now I see you have, like, people go through, as you mentioned earlier, people go through a lot, like, these intense health situations. They face
right.
these existential crises. Have you ever had a patient who's kind of lost their faith and you've had to help encourage them in other ways?
Yes, that actually has happened. Sometimes a patient will talk about, I used to pray to God, for example. I used to love God. I used to go to church all the time. And now I don't know what's happening in my life. I don't know why this is happening. Why? The question why becomes really big with a lot of people, especially those who were raised with a particular faith. Now they want to know, where is God in all of this that's happening to me? So I sit with them and I kind of guide them through where did they find God when they were having trouble in life's situations before? Mm-hmm. So I remind them, if they are a person of faith, usually from the Christian perspective, I kind of help them see that God is always with them and has not forgotten them or forsaken them, but is always there no matter what. And one of the things I really emphasize with them is God did not give them their disease, whether it's cancer or heart disease or whatever. It's just one of those things that happens in life.
Mm-hmm. So when they're faced with questions like that, is that, like, I know you talked a little bit about, like, the words you would use, but would you say that, like, exactly, or was there any other type of, like, words you would use to encourage
them?
I
use whatever words they use.
Yeah,
so if they are using the words God, or if they're saying, you know, I don't understand why God would let this happen to me, then I use those words back to them. Why do you think that God is doing this to you? Sometimes they'll say, I think that God is punishing me. Okay, tell me more about that.
Oh, I see.
Talk to me about that. What's going on that you would feel that way?
Oh, I see.
And so then they open up and then they start talking about all kinds of things.
So you kind of just like talk to them more about like, sorry, I'm trying to find like the words to say it. Like you're trying to find, keep them talking about faith. And does that kind of like reassure them that, you know, like even through the hard times, they keep coming back to it and there's a reason they keep coming back to it?
Exactly.
Okay, perfect.
Exactly. Right. Right.
Perfect. So just continuing on, how can you take us through a typical day at the hospice in just the role you have? I mean, I know we talked a little bit about how you would help and like care for patients that way, but in a typical day, what would you do?
So in a typical day as a spiritual counselor or as the volunteer coordinator, because those are two very different positions and I do them at two at different days of the week.
Perfect. So let's just start with spiritual counselor.
Okay. So, spiritual counselor, what happens is I am assigned to different patients, and I would call up the patient or the family member and introduce myself. Let's say it's going to be the very first visit. I'll introduce myself. I'll explain a little bit about who I am, what I do, how I can provide support, and I ask them for can I come and make a visit? Generally, the answer is yes. So I go and I make a visit. And the initial visit is really me getting to know the patient and the family. What's been going on? What brought them to the point where they're now on hospice? And what has the doctor been talking about? What has the nurse been talking about? Where are they now? How are they feeling? How are they coping emotionally? How are they coping spiritually? And then I can find out more about their spiritual resources, their spiritual strengths, their connections. I can find out about their family support, friends, neighbors, who provides not just emotional support, but also like physical support. You know, do they have somebody that brings them the groceries? Do they have someone who helps them pick up the newspaper or the mail? Do they, you know, what kind of help do they have, and what kind of help do they need in addition to what they already have? And then I find out, you know, hey, what are your needs? What are your main concerns? You've been given this terminal diagnosis. You're on hospice now. What does that mean to you?
I see.
That just opens up all kinds of conversations.
So, I mean, I know you said it opens all types of conversations, but I feel in that situation, well, not I feel, how would you encourage people to open up? Because I know some people, when faced with extreme situations like that, they tend to self-isolate and feel like they're alone. How do you help them feel like, hey, you're not alone and I'm here for you?
I tell them. I say, I know sometimes it can feel like you're all alone and that this, you feel like, this is happening to you, but I want you to know you have an entire team of support. So we have a nurse going out and visiting the patient. We have a home health aide going out and visiting the patient as well to provide that hands-on care, maybe helping the patient take a shower or doing a bed bath or something like that. We have social workers assigned to the patients as well, and they provide additional counseling support as well as provide resources. Maybe they need mortuary help, or maybe they need help with getting caregiver assistance or something like that. And then there's me. And then we also, then I can talk about me and what I can do. And then I can bring up the idea of having a volunteer. I know maybe, you know, you feel lonely or something. Sometimes they'll say, you know, I'm really lonely. I don't know what to do. You know, my son is here or my daughter's here, but they're not here all the time, or they have to go to work or whatever. So then I can say, well, you know what? We have volunteers who are available and they can come and visit with you for a couple of hours a week. How does that sound? Would you like that? Sometimes they're like, hey, yeah, okay. Other times they're a little bit more skeptical. Well, what does a volunteer do? So then I can talk about all the different kinds of things that the volunteers can do.
Perfect. Now, let's actually elaborate, because now we've heard about what you do for your patients. We just want to see how volunteers can help with that and what's the role they have. Sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. Great question. So volunteers can go and visit patients, like I was saying, being that friendly visitor, providing that companionship to someone who's lonely. They can run errands. They can bring them their groceries, put away groceries. They can wash dishes, that kind of thing. They can walk the dog, feed the dog, or, you know, the cat or whatever. Be in touch with the family members. Let them know how the patient is doing if the family doesn't live with the patient or nearby. They can we have actually a volunteer right now who's a pet therapy volunteer.
Oh, whoa, that's cool.
Yeah, he has a dog that is a certified pet therapy animal, and he has two cats that are certified pet therapy animals as well. And he takes them and visits patients to provide animal visitation and interaction. And the patients who accept his visits really love it, especially if they're living in a facility like a nursing home or something, and they're not allowed to have their animals. If they've always had a dog or a cat and they're not able to have that animal with them anymore, then it gives them a chance to have an interaction with a pet, and they really love it. We also have a volunteer right now who does Reiki therapy.
Reiki therapy?
Reiki, it's sort of a spiritual energy kind of, he calls it loving energy or God's loving energy, depending on the spiritual focus of the patient. But he kind of hovers his hands over the patient and prays, like, silently. Mm-hmm. And just this energy just comes and provides. It's really for comfort and relaxation and to help the patients maybe feel not so agitated or upset or anxious. And so far, he has three patients right now, and so far they are really enjoying it.
I see. So would the volunteer go to the person, or is there I don't want to say an event, but is there kind of like a place where we can, like, not exactly an event, not even a workshop, but like a place where they can all do it together? Is it supposed to be individual?
It is individual.
I see.
Yes. So what happens is we don't have a facility per se where we house our patients.
Oh, yeah.
We don't have like a hospital setting or anything like that. Mm-hmm. All of our patients are served in their own homes. Wherever they call home is where we go. So it could be their own home. It could be maybe the patient had to move in with a son or daughter. Maybe they're living in like a group home, like a boarding care situation, or they could be in a skilled nursing facility or an assisted living facility. Mm-hmm. But all of the interaction that the volunteer has with the patient is one-on-one.
I see. Okay, perfect. Yeah. So how exactly would volunteers apply to be, or do they have to apply? I know
they do. Yes. Perfect. We have an application. So volunteers, generally they contact me one of three ways. Either they call me on the phone. Mm-hmm. They find us on the phone, our phone number. They call me up and they express an interest. Usually they find us online or they've been referred by somebody.
I see.
Also, we do have ongoing ads on volunteermatch.org. Mm-hmm. And we have ads on Craigslist. We also have ads on Indeed and All for Good. And that's how they contact me. So generally, it's an email or a phone call. I talk to them. I send them an email. They come into the office, fill out an application. We sit down. We have a conversation a lot like this. Mm-hmm. I interview them. I find out more about who they are, what their background is, why they want to volunteer with hospice. Because hospice is really not for the faint of heart. You have to have a real passion for wanting to serve terminally ill people.
Perfect. So just going off the application process, once they've had the interview, once they filled out the application, do they have a special training, especially because you said it's not for the faint of heart?
Right.
Do they have like an empathy training in a way, or like
kind of, okay. Yeah. So after they fill out the application and do the interview, if we both agree that they want to move forward, I have them complete a background check. So that's pretty extensive, especially because we want to look at their driving record. We want to make sure that they have a clean record. No DUIs, no speeding tickets, nothing like that.
Would they be taking the patients anywhere, or it's just them running errands
It could be them running errands. They're not allowed to have any patient in their cars.
Yeah, okay.
But because they are driving to and from patients' homes, we want to make sure that they are safe. Perfect. And safe drivers are, you know, good for us.
Yeah.
You know, and it's good for them. The safer, the better. You know, we don't want to have any accidents, you know.
Yeah, of course.
So once I get the clearance back from the background check, then I call them and they begin their orientation. They do a bunch of it's basically signing of paperwork. Mm-hmm. I talk about the attendance policy and my expectations. I talk about we have a no harassment policy. So it's really policies and procedures.
No harassment. I can't imagine that being a problem before.
Well, you know, sometimes you never know. People can say something offhanded and someone can take it the wrong way. So we have to make sure that people are mindful of their words as well as their actions. And also the no harassment policy goes for the patients as well. If a patient or a family member harasses a volunteer, then they need to let me know, because that means that that is an unsafe environment and I do not want to put any volunteer in an unsafe environment. So that volunteer would be removed from that assignment. For example. Yeah, no. I take very good care of the volunteers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and it's not just me, it's a team effort. As soon as a volunteer is assigned to a patient, I let the entire team know that this volunteer has been assigned to this patient. We need to keep watch out. You know, this person's now a member of the team. We need to be in communication. Here's contact information. And communication is a two-way street, obviously.
Mm-hmm, perfect. So just in addition to that, what are the three qualities you look for in a volunteer and why?
So I look for education. I look for empathy and heart. And I look for experience. And it's not necessarily experience in hospice, but it's any kind of volunteer experience, and it's any kind of experience that they have taking care of someone else. And that someone could be a family member, it could be a pet, it could be a horse, it could be a cat, it could be a dog. Anything that shows me that they have a caring, loving heart. And I also look for longevity. Mm-hmm. If they are a person who has jumped around to 6 different jobs in 1 year, then that raises a little bit of a red flag. If this is their first volunteer experience, I want to know a little bit more. Why now? And why hospice? And what makes you think that you would be a good fit for this position?
I see. So with the program, there isn't an exact like amount of time you need to spend with the program, correct? Or I know you're looking for a commitment, but is there like a signed contract, like you have to do it for a year?
I look for a commitment for at least a year, a minimum of a year. And I do have volunteers now. I started doing the volunteer coordinator job in September of 2016. Mm. So as of September 2017, I already had volunteers who'd been with us for over a year.
Oh, I see.
So, for a year. So that's awesome. That's fantastic. So I do look for that minimum of a year. But I also look at, is this something that you do see yourself doing? Mm-hmm. Can you, if you can't commit to a year, can you commit to 6 months and then we'll reevaluate?
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Perfect. For me, there's no hard and fast rule on that, because I just want them to be able to do something. If this is where they feel led, then I want to help them in whatever way I can to make that happen.
I see. So do you check in, like, often with them? Like, hi, like, is it a weekly thing, or is it kind of you let them, I don't want to say have free reign, because I know you do want to take care of your patients, you do want to take care of your volunteers.
Right.
But how often would you, like, check in and make sure everything was good to go?
It really depends on the volunteer. Mm-hmm. Everything, I don't have a cut and dried answer to that,
yeah,
because it all really depends on the volunteer. Some volunteers I feel very comfortable that, you know, once they, you know, have completed the training and they're already visiting with a patient, it could be weekly, it could be every other week. Sometimes it just really, you know, it could be a volunteer who decides, you know, I need to take a break and not see a patient for a while. I had a really, you know, rough time with this patient. This patient died and I just need a break, you know. Then I was like, okay, I'll give you a break. You let me know when you're ready. You know, and if I don't hear anything within a, like, let's say a month, then I will reach out to them and say, hey, how you doing? You know, is everything okay? Anything I can do to help you? That kind of thing. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you so much. Now I see we're running out of time. Would you mind reiterating exactly how volunteers can reach out to you to volunteer, or contact info? Like,
yes. Perfect. So they can contact me at Valley's Best Hospice. And that phone number is 818-761-1205. Or they can use my email address, which is sthomas, T-H-O-M-A-S, at V as in Valleys, B as in Best, hospice.com.
All right, you heard it here on Have a Care, the show that spotlights humans acting for humanity. Thank you again to Stacey Thomas from the Valley's Best Hospice for visiting us today. I'm your host, Danielle Padilla, signing off. Good day, and here's to a better tomorrow. Okay, well. So anything else you wanted to add before we ended the show today? Anything, like, extra? Any tips for volunteers who are kind of on the fence about it? I know we talked a little bit about the show. Not the show. A little bit about what we do on the, what we do at the hospice and what they, like, the errands they would run and everything like that. But is there anything you'd want to say, like, that makes, I don't want to say make it worthwhile, because they should have that instilled in them.
Right.
But anything for people who are kind of on the fence about it?
If you're on the fence about volunteering for hospice, I say go for it. Just call up me, reach out, say, hey, I heard about your hospice agency on Danielle's show. I'm interested. I want to know more about it. And we go from there. It's really very organic conversation that we will have. And, you know, if you're not in the area, call up your local hospice agency. Just do a Google search or an internet search for local hospice agencies, and 5 million will show up in your search. So,
and in your opinion, why hospices specifically, do you think, as opposed to, like, oh, I don't know, any other type of thing?
Well, for me, this is my passion.
Yes.
End of life is my passion. I want to help everybody understand that end of life is something that happens to everybody, and that it can be done with dignity and love and comfort and compassion, and to help people not be alone at this critical time in their life.
Awesome. Okay, perfect. Okay, perfect. Thank you so much again.
You are so welcome. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it, Danielle.
Perfect. Thank you. This is Danielle Padilla for KPCRadio.com.